We've been traversing a series of concepts with regards to the straight gate. I've encouraged you to understand that the straight gate is not only limited and narrow, but it is exclusive. It's for that reason that I feel that we as a fellowship must recognize, as one of our elders actually said this morning in his Bible class, that our greatest weapon is actually a weapon that is used to convince others of what we've got. Our job is to help folks recognize that the straight gate is worth the effort. Going through the narrow passage is worth the process. Because what we emerge into on the other side is so validating, both this side of eternity and the next. We've been talking about three principles that govern the area that's just beyond the straight gate. And I suggested to you that there is a faith filter that we must apply to our setting. Some are not going to be as far along, advanced in their faith as others, but that doesn't mean we should dismiss them. In fact, it means that we should probably buddy up to them, sit next to them, allow our music to blend with theirs so that there can be a progress on both of our parts. I suggested to you in that lesson, the faith filter, that the principle we must understand is that we might be separate, but we can never be divided. That came from Romans chapter 14, verses 1 through 4. The next lesson, we journeyed further into the book of Romans, and we looked at Romans chapter 14, verses 5 through 12, and in that passage, we saw that it is important for us to be able to worship wide open. And that may have been the most liberal of the various sermons that I presented on this particular topic. I know it left some of you with your mouths ajar, wondering, how far are you going to go with this? Are there no limitations that you're going to place on us, Sonny? And in this particular lesson, when we looked at worship wide open, I suggested to you that it's not so much about what you do as it is about who you are on the inside, why you're doing what you're doing. And I suggested to you that the principle there with regards to governing the heart, that idea of worship wide open, is that we need to understand that harmony is over unity. And though Jesus prayed for unity in the book of John, it wasn't unity that was really the goal of his prayer. It was harmony. Harmony is what he wanted when he said, I want them, Father, to be as you and I are. Now, as a side result from that, there will be unity. But the real point of the prayer was, I want harmony to exist. And it's that thread that I use to introduce this final message in this particular series. Mutual edification. As we consider mutual edification, and I'm not going to define it again for you because most of you can do that on your own, but when you consider this part of the passage from the book of Romans chapter 14, you begin to recognize that it's not even really about harmony. It's about a chord that we must strike. Let me read the passage, then I'll explain. Romans 14, verses 19 through 22. Let us therefore make every effort to do what leads to peace and to mutual edification. Do not destroy the work of God for the sake of food. All food is clean, but it is wrong for a person to eat anything that causes someone else to stumble. Skipping on down to verse 22 then, he says, so whatever you believe about these things, keep between yourself and God. I've got 3 points, but before I get there rapidly, you need to see this introductory concept. I've got it underlined there for you. Keep between yourself and God. Last time I suggested to you that we need to pursue harmony. But you know, harmony only requires 2 parts. You have 2 notes, and if they blend well, they're harmonious. A chord, however, requires at least 3. And I'm convinced that the underlying message of Romans chapter 14 and Jesus' prayer with regards to harmony, the underlying message is really not even so much harmony as it is accord. I need for you in this new area of fellowship to strike accord. 3 things have to exist in order for there to be accord. First of all, I would suggest to you that there has to be a divine note that is played. It is the note around which everything else revolves. I understand that. The Creator plucks, if you will. He hits, if you will. Whatever the analogy you need for your mind to understand this, He gives us that divine note. The church then is asked to strike a similar note, a complementary note to what the divine note has played. And so that other note comes in underneath, adds to, harmonizes with, and we have a wonderful concept. But it's only when the third part enters into the process do we fully understand Romans chapter 14, because the third part is the you note. It's your personal note. It's whatever it is that is resonating within your spiritual heart. That has to be added as well. The phrase that I've underlined there in verse 22, keep between yourself and God, really emphasizes the point of last time's lesson. Because you see, there is a time when it's just the you note and the divine note. Jesus speaks of that. He tells us too when we're praying, there are times that we need to go into our closet and there in private we pray to the Father who sees all that is in secret. You see, that's just a you note and a divine note put together. That's just a you and Him. And that's a good thing. But that's largely what we talked about last time. And when we dealt with all the liberalities that I was trying to usher in with regards to how you can express yourself to God, remember the potato head illustration. That's a you note and a divine note. And in that scenario, in that setting, the field is wide open for you to express yourself. But it is also governed by the phrase that we have underlined here. Keep between yourself and God. You see, there's a time after passing through the nexus when you're in this open fellowship. There's a time when you recognize that part of my journey, maybe even a majority of my journey, will be just a me and God moment. A me and God journey. And that's okay. And it's good for that to happen. That is harmony. A you note and a divine note. But that is not the entirety of the fellowship after passing through the nexus. This is the most difficult part of the fellowship that we experience or are called to experience. It's the most difficult part of Romans chapter 14. Because you see, God calls us to go beyond the you note and the divine note and add in a third, the church note. Now we have a chord. And yet, we also have something that is significantly more complicated. Because now I not only have to focus on whether or not my note is played correctly, God's going to get His note played correctly. But I have to also focus on whether or not my note is in harmony with the church note. And my note and the church note is in harmony with the divine note. You see how complications begin to come about with regards to fellowship. And so, as Paul writes this amazing chapter, he addresses that very idea. How do you govern a chord? What must we do to make sure that our cord is as it needs to be? I would suggest that there are at least three things that Paul says. You see them there in bold, specifically in verse 20. Paul says, in order for this cord to be governed correctly, we need to understand that we must not destroy the work of God for the sake of food. Number one, destroy. If we are to allow the chord to be played properly, and this passage and Jesus' prayer and others would suggest that when played properly, the world will take notice and many of them will respond positively. But in order for that to happen, we have to understand, first of all, this idea of destruction. There are many in the church, when it comes to this open freedom, there are many in the church who will say, but I don't like that. I wish that it were different. That particular person just gets on my last nerve. None of those three, by the way, have anything to do with this verse. We've got to remember that just because you don't like it, it doesn't mean that the church should turn the whole wagon upside down to make sure that your preferences are met. The passage says that the reason we are able to unite is because I look at you and I say, I will not do anything that, here's our word, destroys your faith. He did not tell me that I couldn't do something that you didn't dislike. He said, I must not do anything that destroys your faith. And you see, there's a lot of things that happen within our fellowship that we've split and splintered about that's not really a destruction of faith at all. It's just simply somebody didn't like it. And because one or two people in the congregation didn't like it, the entire rest of the congregation had to suffer for that. Dislike is not the criteria. Destruction is. And so as you look at the freedom within this fellowship, know this. Your brother says, that particular thing in worship makes me uncomfortable. Is that enough? You've got to determine what uncomfortable means. If uncomfortable means, it just isn't my preference. I would rather sing Amazing Grace than Zacchaeus climbed up a tree. It makes me uncomfortable, Sonny, when right there smack dab in the middle of the worship service, you've got all the little children building their house and clapping their hands. I just don't find that to be appropriate. We need to be singing something like the old rugged cross. That is not enough for you and I to separate our fellowship or even to make an issue over. Just because you dislike, it doesn't mean you're being destroyed. However, if we were to introduce something into the service that causes you to truly look toward abandoning your faith, that must be stopped because that's destroying. I cannot, must not allow destructive controversy to enter the church. There will always be differences of opinion. There'll be those who would rather us serve communion from the front than those who would serve it from the back. There's always going to be somebody who doesn't like us dimming the lights in the middle of the communion service. Somebody's not going to like the fact that Rick always wants to sing that particular song, or he sings at that particular pace, or Sonny Childs is constantly telling that story or reading from that particular book. Somebody's always going to have an issue. That's going to happen. But in order for us to have unity, harmony, accord within the open fellowship that we find this side of the nexus, we've got to recognize that if it doesn't destroy my faith, it must not divide the faith. Point number two. Do not destroy what? The work of God. If you keep this passage in context, he's obviously speaking toward the individual whose faith is not as mature as another's. So one person's faith will allow him to eat. Another person's faith will not allow him to eat. Can they both be right? Yes. That's verse 4 of this chapter, Romans chapter 14. However, we also have to recognize that that individual who does have a problem with whatever that particular issue is, God's still working on them, as hopefully he's working on you. And somewhere along the line, you were given patience to grow a little bit further. Somebody along the way held their tongue, kept back the criticism, didn't split the church over it, because they felt like that if you just had a little bit of time, you'd get there. And you see, that's what he is saying here in verse 20. We need to not destroy the work of God. God's working in all of us. If ever you find a Christian who God is not working in, then yes, you need to do everything possible to draw that person back into a working relationship with God, or you need to separate yourself from them because they're a destruction to your faith. But if you find any evidence that God is still at work in that person's life, you must, according to Romans chapter 14, give them latitude, give them opportunity to grow up. That'll produce unity and harmony, and most importantly, it'll produce a wonderful chord. Number three. This one may seem a little odd, but I think you'll get the point, and especially if you read it for yourself. You see, he's not really talking about food here. The issue is not food. The issue is not whether or not we celebrate this day or that day. It's not. He's just giving us illustrations. So what does he mean when he says, do not destroy the work of God for the sake of food? What's he talking about? Petty issues. Stuff that is generally dominated by the here, the tangible, the now, has very little to do with the character of a person, has very little to do with the spirit within, and everything to do with the conditions that are without. And so we argue over what color we're going to paint the wall. We argue over whether or not we're going to put this carpet down or that carpet down. We argue over scheduling. We argue, you just name it, because we've all argued over those things. And he is saying this, don't destroy the work of God for the sake of the petty. You see, the unity, the harmony, the cord that is within is so much more important than the petty. Don't destroy the work of God for the sake of food, for the sake of the petty. If we can practice those principles, not only will life be sweet this side of the nexus, but the world who has not yet passed through the nexus will say, I want that. You see, it's what happened in Rome in Acts chapter 16. Paul and Silas are at the back end of a prison cell in a foreign city. They've been beat for something that shouldn't have put them in prison. They were doing a good thing, exercising the demon from that little girl. Here are good men who've been beat and chained to the back end of a prison cell. It's midnight. And instead of whimpering and complaining, they're singing and praying. And God takes notice. But not only does God take notice, the jailer takes notice. The earthquake comes, the chains fall off. The jailer's about to commit suicide because he knows what happens. When somebody under his care escapes, he'll be tortured to death, and he doesn't want to go through that. So he's about to take his own life. And what does Paul say? Don't do that. We're all still here. And it says that the jailer rushes in, falls down before Paul, and what does he say? Here's Sonny Chow's version. I want to be like you. How can you do this? How can you sit in the back of a rat-infested cell, condemned for doing something good, beat within an inch of your life, and sing at midnight? Whatever it is you got, I want some of that. Now let me change the scenario. If Paul and Silas were sitting at the back of that prison cell, whining and griping, and Paul said, Silas, if you just kept your mouth shut, we wouldn't be here. And Silas said, but you're the guy who's leading the whole campaign. If you just kept your mouth shut, we wouldn't be here. I know, but you didn't. And what if they just went to bickering and to fighting and there was no unity? There was no harmony. There was no cord that was struck between them and the Holy Father in heaven. What if that had taken place? I guarantee you, the jailer's not going to break through the darkness and say, I want some of that. I want to be like you. Our greatest evangelistic tool, according to the words of Jesus, is unity, harmony, and accord. We do that, and the world will want a piece of it. The world will want to be a part of us. Don't destroy over something that you just dislike. Don't destroy the work of God as he continues to operate within the heart of a brother who might be less mature than you spiritually speaking, but still on the journey. Don't destroy the work of God for the sake of food, the petty. The crossing was muddy, the street was wide, and water was running on either side. The wind whistled past with a bitter moan while I made my weary journey alone. As I traveled along, I chanced to pass a boy in the arms of a wee small lass. Isn't he heavy, my sweet little mother? Oh, no, she replied. You see, he's my brother. The load may be heavy, the road may be long, the winds of life may be bitter and strong, but the way will seem brighter if you love one another. The load will seem lighter if you carry your brother. That kind of open fellowship will draw. People will want to be a part of that kind of open fellowship. The question is, here, right now, us, these folks sitting in this room, you and me, how are we doing? There are moments that we have great unity. And then there are sweeter moments when we have great harmony. But all the testimony, when we can arrive at that sweet heavenly chord that struck between the divine note, the note of the church, and the you note, those three put together and the world will want some. That's our job. Are you part of the harmony? Are you part of that great chord? If you don't know Jesus, you're not part of the chord. But if you know Jesus, then you've got a wonderful opportunity to share that chord with the world. We sing this invitation song for your encouragement. If anyone needs to come forward, please do so right now as we stand and as we sing.